Lee, 96.9 FM and 1400 AM, live and local. This is Newsmaker 3.
And we're pleased to have with us on the KVOE Sutherland studio line, Lisa Keith, the director of the David Trailer Zoo.
Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
How are you?
Oh, it's a beautiful morning. Can't beat it.
Really is a beautiful morning. The sun is shining, the wind is blowing, and the monarchs are migrating, Lisa.
They are like traveling through here like crazy right now.
And and the zoo is in the process of doing some tagging. Please tell us what you got going on.
Yeah, the zoo's been involved in the monarch tagging program through Monarch Watch for about 7 years now, and we've been registered as a way station through them for about 5 years. And that's a program that's actually based out of the University of Kansas, and it's kind of turned into an education, conservation, and a research project. So we're excited to be a part of that. And as of right now, we've tagged 157 monarchs. So what
does tagging a monarch entail, Lisa?
Well, first you have to find out a good place of where they are. And then, you know, catching them sometimes is kind of interesting. So early morning, evenings are the best because when they come in to roost is the best time to catch them because it's a whole lot easier, let me tell you. And so you can just more or less when they roost, they're just hanging on the trees. You can literally walk right up to them. They don't move. And you can literally just pick them right off of the tree. You can easily tag them. You just determine whether they're male or female. You tag them on either the left or the right side on the discal cell, which is on the lower side of their wing.
What do you tag them with?
It's a little tiny, small, round, white tag, and it's just got some numbers on it. So that they can identify them once they get to Mexico.
So it must be pretty much weightless then, I would assume, huh?
Yes, it's actually lower on their wings, so it really doesn't bother them at all. Matter of fact, as soon as you let them go, they just fly off like normal.
Okay.
What is it? You mentioned here about the process, how relatively easy it is. How many folks do you have involved here with the tagging effort that's underway right now?
Well, it's random. So we've anywhere from 2 to 4 to 6 people at a time. If we find a really big roost area, the more the better, honestly, because we have people who are writing down the information, we have people who are collecting them, and people who are actually tagging. So the most we've had this year so far has been 4 of us. It's been a good group. Actually, it was a good group. We tagged 100 when we had that group of 4.
So what adheres the tag to the butterfly? How does that stick to them, Lisa?
It's actually just like a sticker, but it's extra sticky. So you just put it on there.
That could be tough, couldn't it?
No, not really. I mean, sometimes it sticks to your finger if you pull it up enough and you get it stuck to your finger. But if you can get it on your fingernail, just on the very edge of your fingernail and stick it onto their wing, you're pretty good.
Okay.
Understood. Now, how do you, is this one of those things where you're called and alerted about these roost areas and then you kind of descend upon it en masse, or do you have different areas around that in years past that are past haunting spots, for lack of a better term here, for the monarchs?
Yes, you know, monarchs tend to come back to the same places every year. And so over the last several years, we've kind of figured out where a few of those places are. And so we go back and check those places. And usually within a few miles of those areas, we just check those whole areas. So we just drive around looking up in trees. Last night I spent a lot of hours just driving with my flashlight looking up in trees, trying to determine if there was any other big roosting areas near the trees that we had already tagged. So, and you know, they move on. So some move on and you get new ones in those same trees. So you just always go back and recheck.
All right. So I know there's been concern about the monarch population, Lisa. How have we been looking here the past couple of years as far as numbers go, you know?
Well, I can tell you that it's it's grim. And the more we can do, the better. So since the 90s, they're saying that the population has fallen by 80%. And folks, that's not good. Like, we start losing our pollinators, that's what puts food on our table. And I don't think a lot of people realize how important pollinators are to the food industry.
Yeah.
But that's how we eat. And so it's pretty important that we save, you know, not just monarchs, but all pollinators. And so I think this is one of those times where people kind of need to get on the bandwagon.
Well, we better pay attention because, yep. You know, the bee population, too, is concerning.
Absolutely.
We've been dealing with that. So, we lose the butterflies and bees. We are in some deep trouble, you know, if that happens. So
We truly, truly are. And I know that we're on the eastern side, and on the western side, they're even in worse. The ones that migrate into the California area, they had a cold spell that killed thousands and thousands of monarchs in the last couple of years. And last year, they, in their wintering areas, they only counted around 2,000. And
oh my goodness.
So it's really sad on the western side of the United States there as well. So,
Lisa, on this side, is the tagging effort strictly dealing here with the numbers of butterflies, or is there other data that you're hoping to possibly collect here as part of this effort, or at least set the stage for the collection effort later on?
Mostly it's just which ones make it the full 3,000 miles from Canada all the way down into Mexico, but also counting how many are still, you know, viable and making the trip. We know that there's, by the time that they, from spring to fall, that they actually kind of go through five generations. So, I mean, it's not the same butterfly flying south as is flying north. It's a huge process throughout the whole thing. But, I mean, we learn a lot every single year, and I just think it's important that we continue to learn as a community, as a world, and try to help them as much as we can.
All right. Well, Lisa, before we let you go, how are things going at the zoo otherwise? I mean, certainly you've got construction that's ongoing here with the major renovations taking place at the zoo.
We do. Right now we have some privacy fence going up on the west end of the zoo, right behind I don't know if anybody's noticed the perimeter fence that's kind of bumped back down for the signage that's going down on the corner there of the corner of Soden Road and Highway 99, that privacy fence is going back up behind that perimeter fence right now. We should be starting the parking lot fencing moving pretty quickly. They told us they were going to start last week, and they haven't shown up yet, so we're hoping that they show up this week to start moving that perimeter fence so we can start moving some dirt there. We also, what else?
There's no gravel roads around the zoo right now. We can tell you that much, right?
That's true.
Isn't
yeah,
that
that's
amazing,
great.
John?
Oh, man, that's nice.
There's so much less dust.
I know. Well, great.
Oh,
well,
my goodness.
Yeah, improvements galore and continue out at the David Traylor Zoo, and things just look fabulous already out there. And we appreciate all you do, Lisa, and as always, we appreciate your time.
All right, you guys have a great day.
You too. Lisa Keith, director of the David Traylor Zoo, joining us on our Newsmaker 3 this morning, Chuck.
And we have a Newsmaker 3 coming your way tomorrow. Actually, we'll talk about the Newsmaker 2 first, because we're starting to discuss matters here with school administrators, principals, superintendents here about really kind of how the school years are going here to this